number two on the Thursday edition of Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, as we come to you live from the Ok Chin Community Studios. It's always a pleasure to welcome our next guest, one of our old friends, the legend himself, Mike Golic, joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Golic, how are you, man?
Is there a different word we can go with than old? Just wondering.
Long time?
Do that.
Long time friend? Is that better?
Okay, that's better, better than old. I thought you were going to say old and decrepit.
No, I would never say that about you.
At least not while you're on the show.
Right.
Jared,
it's not in your vicinity.
Hit the music again. Let's do take two. No, I'm just joking. The first thing I got to know, Golic, is have you adjusted the sleep schedule? Are you still getting up at an ungodly hour, or have you adjusted that part of your life?
You know, it took about 3 weeks where I wasn't kind of rolling over at 4:15, getting ready to go to work. So now I'm a good 7:30 quarter to 8 guy. It's unbelievable. Man, if I end up going back to radio for a morning show, that's going to be tough. I don't know if that's going to happen, man. I'm kind of enjoying this life. I may look to see other parts of media, the podcast thing and calling games, and I might leave that, early morning stuff to others.
Right. Yeah, that's a great thing about those live football games. They don't start at 6 a.m.
Yeah, that's right. Time to look for that soft landing, Golic.
I'm leaning that way, Dan. I'm leaning that way.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. All right, let's talk some NFL draft, if you don't mind. What do you make of the draft beginning at number 3 with the San Francisco 49ers? Because we all know it's Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. At least we think we know. And the draft begins at number 3. What do you think the 49ers are going to do? What do you think they should do?
You know, it's interesting that when they traded for that number 3 pick, Trey Lance had already had his. This is what we all do because there's so much time between the end of the season and the draft. You start looking at, okay, well, they traded for this pick after it was after Trey Lance's first pro day, but before Justin Fields or Mac Jones' pro day. Maybe they saw enough in Trey Lance in the pro day that says we're going to trade up to number 3 and get him, which is all laughable to me because pro days to me, especially for quarterbacks, are a joke. Mm-hmm. Anybody that uses them to say, oh, my God, he just helped himself in the draft, it blows my mind. When I started seeing the Zach Wilson rolled left and threw a ball, or maybe it was Justin Fields. I don't even know.
It was Zach Wilson. T-shirt. You're right. Yeah. Somebody shorts in a t-shirt.
Oh, my God. Did you see that throw?
Yeah.
Did I see that throw? Yeah, I saw the throw in shorts and a t-shirt with nobody rushing him and nobody covering his receiver. I tweeted that out, and some guy's like, oh, half the guys in the league couldn't make that throw. I said, start listening for me and show me the film where they couldn't make that throw. In shorts and a t-shirt. I mean, what are we doing here? It's a joke. So,
and you know what?
This is what we start doing.
And on top of that, you don't even want your quarterback making that throw.
No, you don't. I mean, it's nice if they can make the off platform throws, but you'd rather be able to make the on-time throws. That's what's going to win for you. So there's all that talk. Was it Trey Lance? And then blah, blah, blah. Listen. Kyle Shanahan, the perfect fit for him in my estimation with the way the guy can move is Justin Fields. Justin Fields can do the rollout, can do the rolls, he can do the options, he can do the quarterback running, he throws well in the pocket, he throws well in the run. Mac Jones probably has a higher floor but a lower ceiling. He's going to be more, he can move some, but he's the more, I'm going to get the ball out. You know, I've heard people say this type of quarterback is dead in the NFL. It never is. If you can get the ball out on time and a catchable ball, you'll always have a place in the NFL. You don't always – we have seen the shift to now mobile quarterbacks, and I'm glad because they're really good quarterbacks who can add so much to a team. But that doesn't mean there always can't be a place for a guy who's a little more stable in the pocket, and that's Mac Jones. Trey Lance could have the highest ceiling, but you've never had an FCS quarterback leave early. He's had 13 games and then won this year, and he's leaving early. You know, is the taste of Carson Wentz in your mouth? You know, I mean, but this guy, so if you draft him and you keep Garoppolo for a year and give him a year to kind of get under a pro program, see what he does, I would say Kyle Shanahan, listen, they want to win now. They're getting Bosa back. They got a good running game. You know, they want to win right now, whether Garoppolo's the guy or if they have to put a young one in. To me, it would be Justin Fields.
Talking to Mike Golic here on Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. You kind of read my mind where I was going to go with the Trey Lance question. We see, especially in recent years, a lot of one-year starting quarterbacks in college make the elevation of the pros. Heck, we got one here in Arizona in Kyler Murray, and it's worked out pretty well so far. But like you said, We've never seen somebody from that level of competition do it. Trey Lance has had more pro days than games played in the last year plus. Do you think, you know, if you were a GM, would that particular fact scare you off from drafting Trey Lance if you needed a quarterback?
It would. There has to be some trouble. Listen, there's no quarterback maybe besides Trevor that comes in where you say he's got it all. Everybody has their quirk about him, you know, no matter what. With Trey, you are going to hold your breath because you look at him and you look when he played. He's big, he's strong, he can run. It reminds me of a Josh Allen, a guy who did almost the unthinkable, had a bad completion percentage in college and actually improved upon it in the NFL and shows what a runner he can be as well. You know, this is a version of Josh Allen. If you get that, hell, you struck gold. But Vince, there has to be some trepidation that says, are we going to get that? We saw Carson Wentz having an MVP year before he got hurt and then nothing since. So, you know, you take him and you got to hold your breath. Coaches will always have the confidence in themselves. I can make this guy a great player, whether it's quarterback or whatever position. So that's not going to be a worry for a coach, but it's going to be the ownership and the GM of pick that high in the draft that says, yeah, we have now basically, especially for a GM, I'm putting kind of my job on the line with this quarterback.
All right, I'm curious what you think. What does your NFL savvy and your experience tell you when you get highly ranked prospects coming from the same program, and how do you delineate how good they really are when they're surrounded by great talent? Of course, I'm talking about Alabama, that is Mac Jones, Najee Harris, and the couple of great wide receivers. You look at those great USC teams with Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and Lendell White. How many of those guys, to a man, never reach their ceiling or their potential in the NFL? How do you deal with all these guys coming from one program and figure out how good they really are?
I'll lean, Dan, more, because it's a great question, but I lean more toward a quarterback. Name me the last great quarterback that came out of Ohio State. Name me the last great pro quarterback that came out of Alabama. Unless I'm missing something,
yeah. You
know, and you guys think of it right off the top of your head, who are they? Now, you want to go to running back. Listen, Derrick Henry's been doing a pretty damn nice job at Tennessee,
yeah. Right?
He's been doing well. So you look at Alabama guys, you go all the way back to Julio Jones. But they have, you know, Waddle coming out and Smith. I like those guys. And I think it might be a little easier. There's way more on a quarterback, especially when these guys get taken higher. You guys know the expectation for a quarterback is you're now carrying that team. The expectation for a running back or receiver is you're going to be a major piece of that team. So while maybe in the pros from college, some of the running backs or wide receivers haven't lived up completely to that, I look more at the quarterback. Can you guys name it? Can you guys name me that Ohio State or Alabama quarterback?
Joe Namath?
Listen, I'm stunned that you missed the
great... Kenny Stabler? I mean...
Mike, I'm stunned you missed the greatness of Craig Krenzel.
Yeah, I mean, but see, now, I had always said that about the Big 12. You know, name me the last great quarterback out of the Big 12. But very recently... We got a few, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got Patrick Mahomes. We got Kyler Murray, what he's doing. And then you look at Baker Mayfield, good rookie year, bad second year, really good third year. So we'll see where he goes, but trending well. So you actually are starting to see some Big 12 quarterbacks where we hadn't seen that in the past start to blossom. And maybe that's because of the change a little bit of the NFL. They're now gearing toward college a little more. But of those schools, again, unless your listeners can think of more, you know, I get what you're saying. I mean, Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, these are the schools that put the most players into the pros. Now, you got Joe Burrow, who started out really well,
uh-huh.
You know, and then got hurt. We'll see. But those schools, man, you can't really look at quarterbacks and go, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's quarterback you going to the NFL.
Yeah, I agree.
Mike Golic, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. In terms of name recognition and star power, at least at some point of their careers, the Arizona Cardinals made big splashes this offseason. They get J.J. Watt, A.J. Green. There seems to be two schools of thought. A lot of people like what they did. A lot of people think they're reaching for, you know, stars past their prime to try to win now. What did you make of Steve Keim and what he did in free agency this offseason, Mike?
You know, as long as you have a good mix of young and old, I'm okay with it. What we're going to see, it was a decent amount of money, but they had some money to spend, you know, and all is health. A.J. Green, we have health. These are guys that you know can produce when healthy. And, I mean, listen, we know the Cardinals have to, but they had a good running game last year. Now Drake's gone, though. He leaves and you get Connor. I don't know what that's going to really do to the running game, but you have one of the better running games because you have a quarterback that can run. But you lose your top running back from last year, had almost 1,000 yards. But now, I mean, you have DeAndre Hopkins, you know, you have A.J. Green, you have Fitzgerald, you have Kirk. I mean, you got some weapons. So the passing game, without question, should take a step up. And I don't blame them. You know, that's what fans will sit there and think, man, we can have a chance to win now. You know, what was this? I'm off the top of my head. Was it a 6-3 team and then lost 5 of the last 7?
That is right.
Like that,
you got it.
Right?
Yeah. You got
so,
it.
I mean, you had a team going in the right direction, so you can build on that. You know, I know Hudson's up there in age a little bit, but I love him at center. So you help yourself on the O-line. I know you get a winners as well, I believe, from Buffalo, so you help yourself on the O-line. The running game worries me a little bit on where they're going to go. The passing game should definitely take a step up. And let's see where they go in the draft. You get Watt, you lose your top sacker last year, but that was kind of expected, you know, because Chandler Jones is out. Now you get Jones back. So it's not surprising that Reddick left and went to his college coach in Carolina. So who do you go? You guys go Carolina? You know, is it a J.C. Horn? I mean, you go South Carolina. Is it a J.C. Horn? Mm-hmm. Is it a Caleb Farley? The kid, though, just had back surgery, so maybe it would be Horn to pick up for Peterson, who left. So that's probably an area to go. I think you gave up 26 touchdown passes last year, so you got to, you know, that has to go into the equation. I don't mind bringing in the old as long as you have a decent young mixture as well. And this is a team, I think, you know, what direction has Seattle gone? We don't know. Maybe L.A. got better, you know, because of bringing in Stafford. You know, we'll see. So, you know, and San Francisco, Bosa is coming back. They may be going to a young quarterback over Garoppolo, so we'll see. So, you know, it can be a chance to make a move.
All right, perceptually, Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl and his first crack at it outside of New England, how much pressure does that now put on Bill Belichick to do something really good in the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be there because that's always been the age-old question. And my answer to that question has always been Bill Belichick's going to go down as one of the greatest coaches of all time, and Tom's going to go down as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, quarterback of all time. I've always said this between coaches and player when this age-old question gets asked. I always say the players are the ones on the field executing the play, so I always give them a little bit more of the oomph. There can be a really great game plan, but if you don't have good players to execute, it doesn't mean anything. You can have a really crappy game plan, but if you have great players, they can overcome that and play well. So I always lean toward a little more of a percentage to the players on the field because they're the ones that having to execute out there. Bill, I think, you know, Bill's legacy is set. I know a lot of it is tied to Tom, and if he never gets back to a Super Bowl, people are going to say, ooh, that blemishes a little bit. But let's be honest, his legacy is set of what he's done, because even in Tom's Super Bowl wins in New England, more than a few of those were led by the defense, not by the offense and Tom. So football people will know what Bill Belichick means to the game of football. So I don't think his legacy decides on how far he gets anymore, but I'm sure pride does that says, I've been up there for so long, and I need to get back.
While we're talking about Tom Brady, I got one more for you, and I don't know if you saw this because it just came out today, but Tom Brady is the first vocal critic of this new uniform number change policy in the NFL. He put on Instagram, good luck trying to block the right people now, going to make for a lot of bad football. Does Tom Brady have a point there, Golic?
I don't think so. I think that's overthinking it. I mean, you leave it. Listen, we see it every time when you go to the line of scrimmage. It's all about identifying.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback identifies, makes a call. You have a center. You guys are going to have a center, and Hudson is about as great as they come as far as identifying. You identify. The guys on the line know. I don't care about the number. It's the position. We're already turning into a positionless defense anymore. You know, look at the, you know, some of the linebackers you have. They could be safeties. It could be slot corners. It could be linebackers. They could be back. They could be on the line. So who the hell cares what numbers they're going to wear to identify them when they get to the line on where they are?
Uh-huh.
So to me, I think that's a little bit overblown. But then again, I'm not the one on the offense trying to identify them. God forbid, guys, the defense get a little bit of an edge, if this can give the defense an edge, that they didn't make another frickin' rule that would benefit the offense.
No doubt about that.
Sorry, Tom, and all your quarterbacks out there, okay?
Wah, right?
All right, last thing before you go. Thank you for your time, my man. As a guy who played the position, J.J. Watt, who is he in the pantheon of defensive linemen, and what do you think he still has left, and what does a guy like that bring to Arizona?
Well, I mean, listen, he brings work ethic. You see how hard he works. So, you know, my dad always told me, keep your mouth shut, your eyes and your ears open. I did that when I went to college in the NFL. I watched guys who have been successful and how they prepare, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's on the field, or whether it's in the meeting room. And J.J. Watt's a guy that has always prepared well and had himself ready. So I think that's a great thing for younger players to see. And then, listen, I mean, it's a hold your breath, cross your fingers, he stays healthy.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those guys that can line up on a tackle, on a guard, on either side of the line, and wreak havoc. We did that with Reggie all the time. You find the weak spot, though we had a lot of strength on the D-line with Jerome Brown and Clyde Simmons as well, so we didn't always have to do it. But you can move him around to get the matchup you want. A versatile man that big is always incredibly impressive.
Yep. Golic, thanks so much for making some time for us today. Always good to talk to you, man.
All right, guys. Take care. All right.
Mike Golic, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit coulternissan.com.
You know, he was, Thibault was all over him tonight. It was a physical game. And then when we needed him to step up and make plays, he did. That's just who he is. A lot of guys, after having, you know, that kind of game before that moment or those moments, typically don't want the ball. They kind of shy away from it. He didn't do that. You know, that's who he is. He doesn't run from that responsibility of being a closer and knocking down big shots to help the team win.
Monty Williams, head coach of the Suns, on Devin Booker last night in just under 30 minutes of playing time. Not a horrible shooting night, 6 of 14, not great either.
Mm-hmm.
0 for 3 on three-pointers, missed a free throw, 19 points. But it's the way that production was dispersed that is really the big story in the Suns' 113 win over Philadelphia last night to get win number 42. 8 of the 19 points came in the last 2 minutes of the game when it was going back and forth, and that game was very much in doubt. It was disconcerting. I mean, I'm watching that game like everybody else, thinking, wow, Book is just being neutralized, just taken out of anything that they wanted to do offensively with him, and the Suns were still in pretty good shape. And then when the game was there for the taking, you know, he goes into the phone booth and you know, puts on the Superman outfit and comes out and makes winning basketball plays. I was way more encouraged about the finish than I was discouraged, though, about the three-quarter performance.
Same here. And this isn't necessarily being encouraged or discouraged. I'm trying to analyze what is something that is certainly a work in progress, and that's Devin Booker's performance down the stretch of this NBA season. It's been very erratic. He hasn't been great. Last night, he made one of the most difficult shots you can even take on a basketball court that was really a difference maker. So the very end of the game was everything you want from Devin Booker. So this is a win. But how you got there, you wonder, because there's been a lot of instances recently when he's been locked up, whether it was Drew Holiday, whether it was this Matisse Thybulle guy, there was another dude before that gave him fits. I was curious. I think from this point forward, if they're going to do this, you've got to get Devin Booker some screens, because near the end of the game, he made a huge three. It came against George Hill, who's not a bad defender, but he's not this Thybulle guy. And then he made two shots against Thybulle, but it was the optics of it.
Mm-hmm.
When Devin Booker had jump shots swatted back into his face, it was like, what's going on
here? Now, those were both, and I'm not taking away the great defensive plays, they both were late in the shot clock situations, too.
Well, he was struggling to get off shots.
Sure, but that does, I mean, for a defender as talented as Thybulle is, that gives you a little bit more of an advantage timing-wise.
Yeah, but it was
still great plays.
He had a hard time getting anything going up until that very end. So I don't know what to make of it. It's a net win, because I think Devin Booker is realizing how good he's been up to this point may not be as good as he wants to be down the stretch. And he's going to have to find even more creative ways to get off shots and get to the rim and beat these kind of defensive players. I think last night was even more evidence of running the offense through Chris Paul at the end. All's well that ends well. Not complaining one bit. That was a very gutty win, even though the 76ers were deciding to play shorthanded again. That endgame heave from Joel Embiid was one of my favorite moments of the season. It was just stunning to me.
Yeah, we heard the call from Bloomer and Tim Kempton last night. Here's what it sounded like on the Philly television broadcast.
Missed it. Embiid! Oh! Wow! Seriously!
Seriously, is right. That's only 4,094 people making all that noise.
Man, dude, it was just the fact that he put that thing nearly down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Here was Joel Embiid on the shot that almost went in.
I mean, when I threw it, it looked good. I mean, he almost there. You know, I saw the screenshot, and it looked like he went in, and now that's just unfortunate.
It wasn't unfortunate for the Suns.
Yeah, no.
He's a problem, man. Mm-hmm. 38 points, 17 rebounds. I got a buddy who lives back east, and he was watching on League Pass, and he got the Philly broadcast. And he was texting me. He's like, even early in the game, these broadcasters are raving about the defense that Ayton is playing on Embiid, saying, hey, nobody stops this guy one-on-one, and Ayton's doing a really good job. Embiid's so good. And such a hard guard,
yeah.
Because it can be really frustrating to watch,
mm-hmm.
because he's one of those players, and I'm not saying this is a negative, it's obviously working for him, and it's working for that team.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1A, choice 1A, or goal 1A is to put the ball in the basket. Goal 1A, part 2, is to draw a foul. There's so much in terms of created contact from Joel Embiid that it can... It can slow down the game. It can really frustrate defenders and frustrate fans. But, man, is he a talented guy.
Yeah, I thought what DA did very well. I don't think his defense was necessarily great, but I think he competed. I was very, very comfortable with his level of fire and aggression and banging up against Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy matchup. As you said, that guy is just – his size is just not natural.
No.
So he competed very, very well, and so I'm very happy with that. Really, really happy with that. Javon Carter has been playing lights out recently. He gave them a good lift, and Chris Paul, I think, as we talked about yesterday, I think he's going to move the meter on this MVP surge. Now, if Joel Embiid, what he did last night will help move the meter for him. Even a miss like that can get lodged in the brain of people.
Believe me, it's what everyone's talking about.
Is.
It's what they led the highlight on, SportsCenter with that play, not with, a Devin Booker end of game shot.
Well, imagine that.
I have no problem with that.
Does ESPN know the Suns played last night?
Speaking of Javon Carter, he had that stretch with the three big threes. And Cam Johnson, too, coming off the bench, still playing with the mask, which I think looks incredible, even more uncomfortable on him than it looks on most players.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a good game with the mask on last night. He hit three threes. He had to play extra minutes with Jay Crowder, sidelined with the ankle injury after that happened. But mm-hmm. Monty Williams talked about Cam and Javon Carter's performance.
They work on it, you know what I mean? And our guys were upset with JC when he turned down a few shots. And then he got it going in the corner, and it was awesome. You know, to see our guys rally around him, knocking down those shots, and Mikhail and Cam. I mean, that's all three of those guys have worked diligently for those moments. When the ball comes to them, they don't hesitate, except for JC earlier before he started knocking down a few. But I was just proud of those guys, especially with Jay going down, being able to step up and make as many shots as they did and then play the defense that they had to play on the other end.
Now with the back-to-back in Boston, a couple things I'm curious about going into tonight, Bic, is like what you brought up earlier. Do they manage minutes a little bit differently? Mm-hmm. Is it flat-out rest? We shall see. I don't think they go down that road yet, but I am interested to see what they do now at the four. with Jay Crowder not available.
I mean,
do you go with Cam Johnson? Do you keep him on the bench? Do you start Torrey Craig? Do they plug Dario Saric back in there? I mean, they have options, but I'm not sure which one is the best right now.
And then folded into that very discussion, another bad game for Dario.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you do with at what point in time do you look for alternatives? I don't know.
Well, that's where they don't have a ton of depth, so
that
might be the issue. Suns and Celtics tonight, 4 o'clock on ESPN, 620 a.m. Coming up next, it's Thursday. We roll out another edition of Mock My World straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta, Mock My World.
Stop mocking me!
Brought to you by V's Barbershop.
Yes, man, I'm licking my wounds after last week's Mock My World performance, but it means a first pick this week. Last week, we went down the road of best people with the initials JR in tribute to Jackie Robinson.
All right.
Jackie Robinson Day that we played. Jackie Robinson was not eligible to be drafted, but Jarrett ran away with it. 42.3% of the vote. Jerry Rice, John Ritter, Joan Rivers, John Ratzenberger. Sarah finished second with 29.2%. Bick, you came in third, 17.7%. Still kicked my butt, 10.7% for me.
Wow. Nobody in single digits is a successful week.
Yeah, you could say that because you won.
I almost never win anymore, so I'll take it.
So this week, because there was a big news story early in the week about an ill-fated idea in the world of sports, that is our purview this week from My World.
Okay.
The worst ideas or biggest flops in sports history.
Okay.
So not necessarily, not a player.
Okay.
Who had a, you know, that had expectation and didn't have a good career.
Not like biggest busts, but biggest.
Yes.
But just sports failures, disasters, bad ideas, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I will go first. Bick second, Sarah third, Jarrett fourth. Four rounds, snake style draft. And I will start with the first one that popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
It does involve a person, but it's more the idea. The idea of drafting Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. Does that qualify? Is that a good example?
Yeah, okay. I have examples like that.
Okay.
So.
You can take
drafting Sam Bowie.
Jared.
Okay. All right, I will take LeBron's The Decision.
Ooh. That's a good one. It is funny now how retroactively they really pushed the money went to charity part of it.
Yeah.
Because it was such a bad look in real time.
I think I was filling in on your show when that went on.
Really?
Yes.
Where was I?
I think you were on vacation. It was at another station. And I remember ripping it in real time, and they were grasping at that straw. That's a great pick, though, Vic. Sarah?
Okay, so the way that, hopefully this fits, the way that Jarrett described it to me was worst ideas or biggest disasters in sports history.
Yes.
So Tim Donaghy scandal, does that qualify as a huge disaster in sports history?
Sure, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you threw all this verbiage on this competition, Jared. I don't know why disaster has it. Worst ideas in sports.
Right.
It's really simple.
Okay, so then I can go to something else.
Yeah, I would say don't do that one.
Okay.
Well, then why'd you text that to me, Jared?
Because what I meant by disaster.
I would say what I told you is no.
Okay.
No. What?
I meant like failure.
Wait, is this edition of Mock My World eligible to be drafted?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So with my first pick.
Yeah.
Okay. So then ideas that didn't work out. I'm going to go with, and I'm sad to say this because I am sad that it didn't work out. I wanted it to, but the Alliance of American Football, which didn't even make it through the first season.
Dreadful.
And it wasn't even stopped by the pandemic.
Nope. COVID didn't ruin it. Yeah. It ruined it.
I'm going to see your Alliance of American Football, and I'm going to go with a league that had failed two separate times, only lasted one season, and is now about to relaunch for a third time, the XFL.
Wait, did I miss the second failure? Was that because of COVID or something else?
COVID.
Yes, the season ended because of COVID, but then the league went out of business, and then The Rock bought the league and is going to relaunch it in a couple of years.
Gosh. Right. So hard to keep track.
Your second pick,
My second pick. Is The glowing hockey puck.
Oh.
Glow pucks.
The glow
pucks on Fox.
Which, in maybe in concept, it seemed like it was okay, but it didn't really work, especially when the puck got out of screen view and it was just like a line across the boards. It was terrible.
Sarah.
Kind of similar-ish. The NBA's new ball. Remember that? The composite ball that lasted all of 3 months, I think.
That's a great
They scrapped it in the middle of the season. Yeah.
Hated it.
Yeah. That's a good one.
That's a really good one.
All right, Bick.
The BCS. The Bowl Championship Series. The
man.
Gambo's
Bowl
fave.
Bowl Championship Series. Yeah.
Yeah. Expect a text from Gambo in 5.
That
was four.
What do you mean?
Look, not for nothing.
Look,
the BCS was great.
It was great.
Two teams played. I loved it.
We don't have time for 6 teams. We don't have time for 8 teams.
All right. I'm going to go with, there was one in my head, and it just escaped my head. I'm going to go with another football league. The USFL's idea to move to the fall, which effectively killed their league. Fall move. And then I will go with... Wow, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. I'll go with the Pac-12 Network.
Oh, that's a good one.
Back to you, Bick.
I will go with AstroTurf.
Ooh.
Oh, that is a good one, too. At any point, did people think that was good? Or immediately, did they like, this was a terrible idea and it's ridiculous?
What, AstroTurf?
Yeah.
It was not liked, but there wasn't really...
It was like concrete.
It wasn't like an... There wasn't an alternative available.
There was no
alternative. Yeah.
And players were not... They were not represented the way they should have been at that point.
No.
It was like putting a thin carpet over cement.
Yeah.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah.
All right, back to you, Sarah.
Okay. Hopefully this qualifies. A really... big disaster / bad idea in sports. Michael Jordan unretiring to play for the Wizards. Does that qualify?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I had that and I didn't know whether to go with that one or
the other one involving Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
All right. You get 2 picks, so do what you want, Jarrett.
All right. I'm going to go because it's such a famous... What do I want to do? All right. I'm going to go with the Red Sox deciding to sell Babe Ruth to the Yankees to fund a Broadway play.
Sell Babe Ruth.
Yeah, good luck getting all that under the Twitter poll.
And then, even though I liked it, in concept it was a terrible idea knowing the audience. Putting Dennis Miller in the booth, Babe.
Dennis Miller, Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Boy, that quarterback throws like Copernicus on a Friday Night Bender, Babe.
Sarah.
Gosh.
He took yours, didn't he?
Yeah, that was totally it. Now I had the whole thing going and yeah. Okay, I am going to go with, again, I'm not really sure. I feel like I don't have a grasp. Even though this is my final pick, I still don't have a grasp on this topic. Does letting Joe Johnson walk count?
No.
Okay. How about 10-cent beer night?
That works.
The Cleveland
that works.
Indians.
That works.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only does it work, you took mine.
Oh, might be.
All right, Bick.
Disco Demolition.
Oh, that was the other one.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to have. There was a third one, too, involved with them that I...
Disco Demolition Night. Oh, man.
Those were both the White Sox, right?
No, 10-cent beer night was the Indians.
That was the Indians yeah. and the Rangers.
This other one I'm thinking of.
I'm going to go with having the DH in only one league.
Mm.
As opposed to 2 leagues or as opposed to at all? I guess it doesn't matter.
Either way. Just the non-uniformity of it
all. So the other one I had was the White Sox were the team that wore shorts one year, right?
That is true.
Oh, my God.
And that was,
that's a great
awful.
One.
It was
so bad.
Counterintuitive.
All right. Worst ideas in sports, drafting Sam Bowie. USFL's move to the fall, the Pac-12 Network, DH in one league. That's my team. Bick's got the decision to BCS, AstroTurf, and Disco Demolition Night.
That's the winner, right?
Sarah's got the AAF, the NBA's new ball, Michael Jordan, the Wizards, and 10-cent beer night. And Jarrett's got the XFL, Glow Puck, selling Babe Ruth, and Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football.
That's a good one.
We will attempt.
And nobody picked Michael Jordan to playing baseball.
That's true.
That was the other.
We will attempt to get that up on Twitter.
We'll attach the Word doc on Twitter.
Have it make sense, and you vote. You determine the winner of Mock My World at Bickley_Murata. Coming up next, The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft continues. Indianapolis Colts and Dan Bickley on the clock at 21. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta, Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
You're a cruel man, Dan Bickley.
Yeah, no,
you're a cruel man. And the audience will never know why.
Yeah. No, they will not.
It's Bickley and Marotta here on this Thursday. The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft continues. We are in day four as the first round rolls on. Some picks made yesterday. Bick is going to make the pick for the Indianapolis Colts coming up in a minute. But let's get you caught up to date on some of the more recent picks in the Ultimate Mock Draft.
Previously on the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
The pick is in. Let's go to the podium and see what they're going to do here.
With the 17th pick in the Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Las Vegas Raiders select Notre Dame linebacker Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa.
With the 18th pick in the Arizona Sports 2021 Ultimate Mock Draft, the Miami Dolphins select Georgia outside linebacker Azeez Ojulari.
With the 19th pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Detroit Lions select Kadarius Toney, wide receiver, go Gators.
With the 20th pick in the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Chicago Bears select Greg Newsome, the second, cornerback, Northwestern.
The Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft.
Ultimate Mock Draft.
Bickley and Marotta are on the clock.
And before that pick is made for Indianapolis, I got to say I'm proud of Gambo. He got Azeez Ojulari right, but he mispronounced linebacker.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what is a linebacker? I want to hear Gambo pronounce the name that Burnsy pronounces, what I want.
Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa.
Oh, you PA announcer, you.
All right, the Indianapolis Colts are on the clock. Is it an easy name? Is it a hard name?
Yawn, the Colts. Yawn. All right. In the 2021 Arizona Sports Ultimate Mock Draft, the Indianapolis Colts select Jalen Phillips, defensive end, the U.
Jalen Phillips, edge, Miami.
Phillips is the kind of defensive end that accelerates into the edge. He has strong physical attributes and he can keep on the attack through the whole play. He keeps his upper body flexible so that he can get over the punch at the top of a rush and has the necessary closing speed to get after the quarterback. He has that important good first step, which makes it easier for him to get into the backfield or get after the runner. This is a guy that plays hard and gives it his all on every single snap. You'll have to consider his injury history with his ankle, wrist, and some concussions. But if he can stay healthy, he will only improve as the season goes on. NFL Comp, Raiders Edge, Max Crosby.
Some concussions?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound promising.
Right, some. Yeah,
there could be two Miami edge rushers taken in the first round with Gregory Rousseau, the other one. With Jalen Phillips in the ultimate mock draft off the board first, he goes to the Indianapolis Colts at number 21. Coming up at 12:45, I will make the pick for the, everybody else's favorite team.
That is the
Tennessee Titans.
Right, right.
And they are a team with clear needs, even drafting at 22. So that will roll on in the next hour. We're talking about the possibility and doing the mock draft. Yesterday, I made the pick for the Cardinals at number 16,
mm-hmm.
and it was Caleb Farley,
mm-hmm.
the cornerback. And I had a choice there if, you know, to go cornerback with one of two guys still on the board. I chose Farley over Greg Newsome, who ended up going to the Bears, as you heard Wolf make the pick at number 20. Even though Farley's got the back injuries, has had the surgeries, Burns and Gambo put it up as a poll question. Would they, would fans be okay with Caleb Farley? And the part of I heard was almost split right down the middle. The fans like the idea of adding a cornerback, which they desperately need, but about half of them were turned off by the fact that he's got a pretty extensive injury history.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be there on the board next week for the Cardinals,
yeah,
quite honestly.
I think it's kind of dovetailing that he might be the guy. You just have to be comfortable with what he's bringing to the table. And if you don't have him slotted as a must-contribute performer next year, I don't see why he wouldn't be a good guy to select, because he's got a lot of great attributes as well.
Oh, yeah. I like his confidence. I like the fact that he's physical. Obviously, they're looking for that ingredient. We've talked so much about the physicality that they've added at different positions this offseason. I would be okay with that if that continued in the draft. Speaking of the draft, normally you'd get your Bickley Blast next, but Steve Keim, Cliff Kingsbury are holding a pre-draft press conference from Tempe. We'll carry that for you live next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.